I'm Lauren, and I'm a veterinarian.
I'm JJ, and I'm a veterinary technician.
And you're listening to Introverts, a veterinary podcast by introverts with high-functioning anxiety.
Welcome, everybody, to Introverts Podcast,
the Halloween Spooktacular.
Moo-ha-ha-ha.
2023. It is my favorite time of the year.
Same.
A few episodes back, we were talking about, you know, what can we do for the Halloween Spooktacular?
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like we had maybe settled on zombies. And I got an email from Dr. Narek, the neurologist, who has been on the podcast before. And she said, I was listening to that episode, and I would love to come and talk about zombies with you guys.
Ooh.
Okay, now, before you get excited, that's not the situation today. Okay.
Damn.
Unfortunately, we could not get that episode scheduled this year. The plan is going to be that we're going to circle back around to zombies next year and have Dr. Narek come as a guest star on that episode.
Sweet.
So for today, the question was, what are we going to do about this year's Halloween Spooktacular? And JJ had a suggestion.
What happens if you get buried alive?
What happens if you get buried alive? Indeed. And I'm like, yeah, I think we can cover that. Like, we'll figure a way out.
I think I had listened to a different podcast that was telling the stories about, they were worried that people were coming back to life or would come back to life. So they had those bells outside the graves that would ring if something movement was happening in the coffin. But I guess they weren't familiar with the fact that the body does things after it's gone and okay. Movement is possible.
Yeah, movement is possible.
So sometimes they would ring the bell, but they'd still be dead.
Okay.
So, yeah.
What you're describing there is a safety coffin. I've heard this described in a number of podcasts, but the one that comes back to me like the most vividly is an early episode of My Favorite Murder, where mm-hmm. I think Georgia probably covered this topic. And so we started thinking like, well, how could we make an episode about premature burial for this podcast? Because we're a veterinary podcast. And I feel like, you know, it should at least tie back to veterinary medicine in some way, mm-hmm. right? I think where this topic is connected to veterinary medicine is the same thing that makes it a strong worry for all of us. It's just every single living thing will eventually die. And there's a lot of mystery surrounding death and a lot of things that we just don't know. And it makes the process so uncertain.
Mm-hmm.
Premature burial is a concern in veterinary medicine, because I know I personally have heard all sorts of veterinary stories. Now, whether these are accurate stories or more along the lines of myth and legend, I am still undecided on. We've all heard the horror story of, you know, this pet, we thought it was dead and it wasn't really, or maybe the owners thought that the pet was dead and it wasn't really. And then owners are always very concerned about, you know, any kind of post-mortem movements, especially following euthanasia, in that the pet might still be alive. I also think that nowadays people are very far removed from the process of death and just don't really know what to expect anymore, which might not have been true, you know, even 100 years ago, maybe even 50 years ago, but certainly 100 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I think that there's probably a collective fear of other people thinking that you're gone when you're not really. And I think that that might inform some of the myths and legends and inventions like the safety coffin, which we will talk about in this episode. And I think that it might drive some of the stories that I've heard across my time in veterinary medicine. The horror stories of, you know, the owners thought that this pet was dead and it wasn't really.
Mm-hmm.
So today we're going to sort of give you a broad sweeping overview of these topics. Now, before we dive in, let's get into a little bit of a disclaimer. We're going to say the same disclaimer that we say at the beginning of all of our Halloween episodes, which is this. The Halloween Spooktacular is supposed to be a fun episode. This episode is not rigorously researched. This episode does not have only the most high quality sources. It is literally just for fun.
Entertainment.
Yeah, it is. Okay, so for that reason, we are not going to reference any sort of recent stories that might be adjacent to this topic. So we are only going to talk about things that happened at least hundreds of years ago. Okay. If you are interested in this topic and you want to learn more, you can feel free to Google that information. I just don't want to use an episode that's supposed to be fun to potentially present information that might still be sensitive. So that's why we're going to only cover cases that have happened a long, long time ago. Okay, JJ.
Yo.
Let's dive in. So what JJ is describing is called a safety coffin. Another name for it is a security coffin. Okay, so this is going to be any sort of like a burial, you know, device, okay, some sort of container that is equipped with mechanisms to prevent premature burial or to allow someone to observe if a premature burial like has occurred.
I mean, I get its purpose and all, but when you, I think safety coffin, you think you're trying to, you know, keep someone safe. And usually if you're in a coffin, that doesn't matter. But
well,
worried about being alive in the coffin, I can see where that would be appropriate.
Yeah, look, we've all seen the spooky TV shows, the movies where you open the buried coffin and the lid is all scratched up and bloody, okay? Ew. Or like, there's maybe one, I used to love scary stories as a kid. I mean, shocker, right? So I used to buy, like when the Scholastic Book Fair would come by, I would buy like any of those like really spooky stories. It would be like a book that had multiple ones in it. Mm-hmm. And I vividly remember this one where this girl somehow gets locked in a trunk while trying on her wedding dress and misses her wedding. And they don't find her until years later. And the lid of the chest, the trunk is all scratched up and she's in the wedding dress and everything.
Mm.
Yeah. Okay. So what the safety coffins are trying to prevent is that, mm-hmm. right? We're just trying to prevent that. So we said, like, we're trying to prevent premature burial. It might allow someone to observe the person that has been buried, or it might provide a way for the, quote, dead body to signal someone that it has, in fact, not been dead and has been buried alive.
I'm not dead yet. I'm getting better.
So these were particularly popular in the, like, 18th and early 19th centuries. There are even numerous designs that have been patented and then variations on these ideas. Some of them are still available today.
Wow.
So if this is a topic that is near and dear to your heart and you would like to purchase a safety coffin for yourself, knock yourself out. Except don't really knock yourself out, because then
you're not going to be able to ring the bell.
That's right. You could be buried alive if you do that. Just saying. According to Wikipedia, the fear of being buried alive really peaked during the 19th century, and this was associated with cholera epidemics. Accounts of unintentional live burial have been recorded, okay? Mm-hmm. They have. It has happened. It's not like a thing that has never happened to anybody. It has occurred, mm-hmm. okay? Although that has been something that has been reported for a long time, during these cholera outbreaks, there became like a wave of increased consciousness about it. And so people started to get like more worried on the day to day about this happening. And these fears at the time were kind of stoked by reports of doctors and then, you know, accounts, then like newspapers and other literature about this sort of thing happening. This is also a topic that's like featured heavily in media and in mm-hmm. the time literature was the big thing. So mm-hmm. in particular, some of the most famous literature that deals with this topic is all kind of published around the same time. And those include things like Poe's The Premature Burial.
Mm.
Okay.
I love me some Poe.
And then The Fall of the House of Usher and The Cask of Amontillado. These stories purportedly contained genuine accounts of premature burial. So this general fear of premature burial led to the invention of these safety devices. Now, there were a range of them, but some of the most common designs included a device for communication to someone outside of the coffin. Okay, so
was it like a can and a string?
The first example is actually the one that you brought up, which is the bell situation.
Exactly. That's what I've heard the most about.
Mm-hmm. So in this sort of setup, a cord is going to be attached to a bell that's like outside of the grave or maybe even the church bells themselves. And the buried person would essentially be able to ring the bell if they happened to wake up and realize that they had been buried.
Would not want to be on the grounds when that bell went off. But yeah, oh, hell no.
So some other coffins that used like an outside means of communication to let people know involved flags, use of flags instead of a bell, or even pyrotechnics, which is really exciting. And I super want to see an example of that.
I don't know what would be worse, the bell or some fireworks going off.
Worse, more scary.
Just like more of an announcement like, hey, I'm not dead. Come get my ass.
I mean, I like the pyrotechnics because it's like, yeah, fireworks, man. It's
dramatic.
Still alive. Right. Yeah, it's very dramatic. I love it. Although I feel like what if they, I feel like they could accidentally go off when you don't want them to.
Or be a dud.
Fail. Exactly. Fail. Everyone's got one of them dud fireworks before.
Yeah, I feel like a bell is going to be more reliable.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay. All right. And some designs included things like escape hatches, ladders, and then like feeding tubes or tubes that the buried person could receive air through. Some coffins have been made with removable glass panes so that the person that is watching the body could kind of like look through and just see them there.
Oh, I wonder, Bram Stoker's Dracula, you know, when the redheaded girl,
Lucy
is in her coffin and
it's
glass.
Yeah, I super know about it, yeah.
Because I was just like, why is that coffin glass? It's creepy.
Well, that is a great question. And I'm going to say, I wonder if that one is glass because it makes for more dramatic effects in the movie.
Maybe.
But it absolutely could be a reference to a safety coffin because if I am remembering correctly, the dates would be kind of lining up here for this.
What was that? Late 1800s or something?
Where Dracula was set.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was the 1800s, yeah. Mm-hmm. The late 1800s.
Interesting. Gary Oldman was not bad to look at in that.
God, I love that movie so much, JJ. Same. I mean, is it objectively a bad movie? Yeah. I mean, it kind of is. Okay. Mm-hmm. It's not very good.
Yeah.
Uh-uh.
It hasn't held up. I mean, but I was like,
look,
I mean, a teenager.
Yeah. It came out in 1992.
Yep. Okay. I was either 15 or 16. So that's like, you know, the perfect angsty time to watch the angsty movie. I think about now poor Keanu Reeves trying to do that accent.
It is. Look, if you took, I love Keanu Reeves.
Same.
Okay. But if you took him out of the movie, it becomes a lot like 50% better because half of the weirdness is him having a surfer dude accent in the middle. And you're just like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
It's like for the first, have we talked about this on the podcast before? I kind of feel like we have.
I feel like we maybe have.
For the first few scenes of the movie, he's like really trying hard with the British accent. And then at some point, they were just like, look, man, it's not working. And he just fully goes into an American 1990s California surfer boy accent.
He's like Bill and Ted.
Exactly. Yes, exactly. You know, he was trying for a dramatic role, okay? Mm-hmm. And look,
he had to mature a little bit more before he could get there.
He was so cute. Mm-hmm. Okay, I just want to pinch his little cheeks, but okay. Maybe. Absolutely.
I bet Johnny Depp would have been a good replacement for Keanu.
Oh, I don't know.
He could do the accent.
He could do the accent.
And he already has chemistry with Winona because they were a couple.
Yeah, but I don't know. I think that that character, Jonathan Harker, has to be very sweet and innocent. And I think that is not a vibe that
Johnny Depp has many.
Correct.
Many facets, but maybe that's not one. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so back to the episode. We were talking about a removable glass pane being installed over the coffin so that observers could be like, yep, they still look dead. Mm-hmm. Okay, check. This was particularly helpful in like a mausoleum situation where, you know, you're not going to be like buried. Because mm-hmm. if there's dirt on top of it, then it's probably not going to be helpful to see importance.
That makes sense.
Okay. Famous people who have had a safety coffin made for them.
Ooh.
Duke Ferdinand of Brunswick had one commissioned before his death. That was in 1792. So this is pretty early.
Oh, he was ahead of his time.
Yep. So he had a window installed so that light could get in. He had an air tube for fresh air supply. And instead of having the lid nailed down, he just had like a lock made. And so he had two keys to the lock, one for the coffin lid and one for the tomb door, and he was buried with the keys. Okay. So he was like, look, we are going to pull out all the stops. If I wake up, I'm going to be able to breathe. And then I'm just going to unlock the damn door, you know, like, and let myself out. No problem.
See, the breathing tube or the feeding tube causes me concern because I think of, you know, things that can.
Okay.
Okay, crawl down in there. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, look, we're going to get to that in a minute. As upsetting as that sounds.
Yeah.
All right, this potential safety coffin item is kind of gross.
Mm.
Okay, so unfortunately, some safety coffin setups were a little bit gross. Okay, so in one setup, there would be a small trumpet-like tube attached to the coffin so that each day the local priest making their cemetery rounds could sniff the tube.
No.
Sorry.
No.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. To make sure that
something stinking.
That the corpse was undergoing.
What
putrefaction. I'm sorry. And if no odor was detected, then, you know, or they were hearing cries for help because they could also listen through the tube.
I mean, what if you was like passed out and you farted? That would may not be.
Well, look, I mean,
there's a difference, I guess, between the stank, but.
Well, we're going to get to this in a minute, but spoiler alert, there is like a low chance of safety coffins being helpful. Okay. But we're going to get there. Okay. So, yeah. So, you could use the tube to listen or to smell to check as you're doing, like, your rounds. Exactly. You would waft it.
Oh, my God.
You wouldn't want to sniff that directly. That's dangerous. You'd waft it, like, in chemistry class.
Lord Jesus.
Okay. Another famous dude, Dr. Adolf Gutsmuth, was buried alive several times on purpose. So that he could show how safe his safety coffins were.
Oh, he was practicing?
He was saying, like, look at this great advertisement for my product. In 1822, he stayed underground for several hours and even ate a full meal. The meal was soup, bratwurst, marzipan, sauerkraut, spatzel, beer, and some dessert that I can't pronounce, girl.
This all sounds very German.
Yes, I think that's the situation. The meal was delivered via the coffin's feeding tube.
Ugh. I mean, how big's the tube?
I mean,
this is like a baby bird situation, or
I don't know. I mean, big enough for those things to fit down there.
I mean, a bratwurst. That's not small. It's like more of a pipe instead of a tube. I need photographic evidence.
Well, it was the 1700s and 1800s, so I'm not sure, like, how much I can do. Right. There are some illustrations. I just can't really show them on the podcast very well.
Sure.
In the 1820s, Germany started using portable death chambers. These were glass tops that essentially would like fit over the coffin, where grave watchmen would check each day to look and see, are there signs of decomposition or are there signs that this person is still somehow alive? And then there was also a bell signal situation so that if something happened and the bell rang, they could pull him out right away. And then if the watchman observed signs that was like, okay, like these people are for sure dead, then they could use like a drop, like a trap door type situation in the bottom of that box so that they would go ahead and drop them all the way down into the grave. And then they could actually move that box off and reuse the box for other customers.
Oh, isn't that just...
Well, I'm sure it was expensive to make that glass box.
Practical.
Then they would slide a panel over to cover the grave and then, you know, fill it in with dirt and everything like that.
And they had a whole system.
They had a whole system. So one of the most famous bell systems was invented by Dr. Johann Gottfried Teuberger. This was the system in which a bell was attached to the hands, head, and feet. And they had a housing built around the bell up top to prevent it from ringing accidentally. And this is kind of a famous design because it was much better than previous designs. It had a special housing that prevented rainwater from running down the tube and netting to prevent insects from entering the coffin. If the bell rang, the watchman had to insert a second tube and pump air into the coffin with the bellows so that they could, you know, have the person have enough air to survive until the casket could be dug up.
Do you know what floated into my head?
What?
When you were talking about the bells, you know, the Hershey's commercial at Christmas time, the little bells.
The kisses? Absolutely. I know. That's a classic commercial.
Yep. That's what it was. Just imagining, you know, all the not dead people playing Christmas music with their bells. That's probably dark.
So the one main drawback of having a bell alert system is something that JJ alerted to earlier.
Bugs?
No. Accidental ringing.
Oh, yeah. The body going through its little changes and moving around some and ring-a-ding-ding.
That's exactly right. So the natural processes associated with decaying bodies cause the swelling or shifts in position that would cause a false positive ringing of the bells.
Ew.
Now, to try to overcome this problem with accidental bell ringing that was not, you know, it was fake bell ringing. Another type of coffin was invented by Franz Vester, and this was in like the mid-1800s. And this had a tube so that you could view the corpse. So if the bell rang, then you would go and look at the corpse and like watch them and be like, okay, are they alive or not? Okay, before you went to the trouble of digging them all up again and everything like that.
No, he still looked dead.
So modern versions of this coffin are still technically available today. In 1995, the modern safety coffin was patented by Fabrizio Casilli. I don't know if I'm saying that name correctly, but that patented design includes an intercom system, a flashlight, a breathing apparatus, a heart monitor and stimulator, and an emergency alarm.
Wow.
That's pretty fancy.
That is fancy.
Okay. Now, despite all of these safety mechanisms and all of this concern about the potential for being buried alive, there are no documented cases of anyone ever being saved by a safety coffin.
Man, it'd been nice if there'd been at least one.
I'm sorry, JJ. And there is one particular modern day practice, especially like here in the U.S. and in other places in North America, that sort of makes premature burial like not a thing anymore. Can you think of what that is?
Embalming.
Embalming, yes. So no one has ever survived embalming.
I would imagine not.
No, that's not something you survive. If you know you are listening to this episode and you're getting really worried about stuff, just know that if you're planning to have a traditional burial and be embalmed, no worries. You won't go into the ground dead if you have been embalmed. Mm-mm. High five. Mm-mm. Although I'm not planning on being embalmed. I'm having something else done, like a cremation or...
See, I was planning on cremation too, but I want to be cheap.
Well, now I'm cremation has started to be not that cheap, actually, for some reason. I don't know, but there are other options besides just the two, burial versus cremation. Mm-hmm. And I'm starting to look at some of the other ones because I think they're cool and like environmentally friendly, hopefully, and that kind of thing.
Where you feed the shrooms.
Yes. So you can be made into like a weird composting situation and become mushroom food. Or you can have like a tree. You could live in a, or not live, you could die and decompose in a tree sack that feeds the root system of a tree. So you can become a tree, technically. You could be aquamated. Like there's so many things that can happen. There's a lot of options out there now.
Creepy.
Well, let's talk about the topic that made safety coffins, quote, necessary. Premature burial.
What do you mean, premature burial?
The term premature burial is describing any sort of live burial, any sort of burial in a situation where the person is still alive. Now, that might mean that it is on purpose, like through a consenting situation, like a prank or a stunt. It might mean, oh boy, we super fucked up on this one and it was a terrible accident. Or it could mean on purpose. Okay. So the term premature burial applies in all of those situations.
Rude.
Yep. Taphophobia is the name for the fear of being buried alive. And it is reported to be one of the most common phobias that people experience.
Yeah, I kind of feel like there's several things that can kind of go with that, like fear of small spaces, claustrophobia. But yeah, I bet that's one thing Ben doesn't like because he can't even watch a video of somebody doing like the narrow cave diving situations. Like he will freak out and leave. He can't see it. Hmm. So I'm sure he wouldn't like to be in a tight space underground either.
No, I definitely would not climb into a small cave area. There's no way.
What all happens to you if you do get buried alive?
Okay, well, if you're buried alive and no one discovers that fact, then generally death is going to occur via numerous avenues. Those include asphyxiation. Okay, so we're running out of air. Dehydration, because we're not getting fluid intake. Starvation, or potentially in cold climates, you might get too chilly and get hypothermia. So a person who is trapped with fresh air to breathe can last a decent amount of time, okay? And that's kind of unfortunate mm-hmm. because as we're going to potentially talk about here in just a minute, depending on how you feel about it, we might talk about some historical executions that involve being buried alive.
Ooh, creepy.
Yeah, very upsetting.
What are some examples of accidental burials?
Okay, well, there have been like maybe a lot of like myths and legends surrounding some of these things. Okay. So the first would be, and maybe they really happened. I don't know. Okay. But the first would be that we might have like grave robbers or other individuals that would often interact with the dead, accidentally reviving people who were thought to be dead, but are in fact still alive. There is that like famous story about a woman who is like woken up in her coffin by a grave robber trying to remove the ring off of her finger. Like mm-hmm. I just vividly remember that one.
It'd be surprising for the robber.
Yes, that would be definite payback for them. Mm-hmm. And so I do have to wonder if some of these stories are like, hey, don't do that because mm-hmm. this, you know, might be a very upsetting situation that could happen to you. So it's likely that the number of incidents of unintentional, like accidental live burial of people are probably pretty low. mm-hmm. and that they might have been overestimated, you know, over time because of interest and things like that. Additionally, especially back in the day, but I mean, sometimes even now, we were talking about how people are very far removed from death now. Normal effects of decomposition might be interpreted by lay people as signs that the person who's really dead is like actually alive.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Because when we think about like, you know, animals that we euthanize, I will see sometimes muscle contractions
mm-hmm.
for hours afterwards, you know, and if you're not used to that, if that is not something that you expect, that could create some distress with you thinking, oh God, we were wrong about that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can remember a couple of times when a leg would move or something and I know what it is and it's still distressing. I'm like, we sure are right. That's not, it's gone.
Yeah.
Cause that's creepy.
Yeah. Now, it seems like based on my research, which was again, not rigorous, that you would actually be much more likely in like the late 1800s to be accidentally sent to the morgue when you're not really dead or to be like trapped like in a box, you know, like above ground, right?
Mm-hmm.
The chances of you being significant, like the chances of you being truly, it was an accident and I have been buried alive are like low.
Yeah.
You know, there have been newspaper reports of exhumed corpses that, based on the appearance of everything, we think they might have been buried alive. Okay. So I thought I would go over some of those accounts.
Mm.
One of those events was on February 21st, 1885. This case was published in the New York Times. This guy named Jenkins was found inside of his coffin, laying face down, which is not how he had been put into it.
Hmm.
Much of his hair had been pulled out. There were scratch marks visible on all sides of the coffin's interior. The newspaper reported that his family was, quote, distressed beyond measure at the criminal carelessness, in the case. The Times also reported another similar story. This was January 18th, 1886. This time it was a girl named Collins from Ontario. They found the corpse with the knees tucked up under the body and the burial shroud was torn to shreds.
Yikes.
Yes. So we don't know, like, in those situations, like, you know, it's been a long time ago, okay? We know that from other cases that we've covered that like reporting back then was not, you know, necessarily 100% accurate. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times they did do things to kind of like sell papers and that sort of thing. So, you know, take mm-hmm. that with a grain of salt, but those are the types of things that have been observed. So while no one has really ever been saved by a safety coffin, you know, there are maybe reports that it looks like people might have been buried alive at different points. Okay. Accidentally.
Eek.
There are several reports of people like being mistaken for dead, but not ever being buried. That was just maybe discovered like at the morgue or mm-hmm. at the funeral home. And I'm not going to read any of those that are even somewhat recent. If you're interested in that topic, you may research it yourself, but I don't want to, you know, have anything exploitative, you know, here on the podcast.
So it sounds like accidental burial is pretty scarce, uncommon.
Yeah, uncommon, yeah.
What are some other types of premature burials?
Natural disasters would be one, okay? Like mm-hmm. an avalanche, earthquake, mm-hmm. mudslide type situation.
That's a sudden premature burial.
That's exactly right, okay? But these are technically associated with premature burial. Same thing. And, you know, mines collapsing, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last type of premature burial would be situations in which it's purposeful. So that's either with the consent of the person being buried or without the consent of the person being buried.
Rude.
Absolutely. Yeah, this is fucked up. Unfortunately, at times in history, purposeful premature burial has been used as a form of capital punishment.
Mm.
And that's in, you know, like multiple cultures worldwide. Okay.
How does that work?
Well, someone in general is convicted of a crime and then they are buried alive.
Yeah.
So in that situation, it's not, we thought they were dead. Whoops. It's like, we just gonna bury you and see what happens.
Prolong your death for a little bit.
That's right. So for example, in medieval England, common law, there are written down specifications that live burial was to be the punishment for things like sodomy, bestiality, and then unfortunately some racist and xenophobic reasons.
Mm.
There are some written records that say that burying people alive was a custom in Persia, and this was something that they practiced in order to be blessed by the gods. In ancient Rome, Vestal virgins who violated their vows of celibacy were buried alive by being sealed inside of caves. And in those situations, they would give them a small amount of bread and water.
Mm.
The thought was that the goddess Vesta would save the women if they were truly innocent and hadn't really violated their vows of celibacy.
Mm.
I know.
That's upsetting.
It is upsetting. And then in the Christian tradition, a number of saints were martyred this way by being buried alive or like walled in. And those are, and again, I apologize if I'm pronouncing these incorrectly, okay? Those are Saint Castellus and Saint Vitalis of Milan.
Mm-hmm.
In Denmark in the 1200s, adulterous women were punished with premature burial at the order of Queen Margaret I.
Dang, Margaret.
I know. And then in the Holy Roman Empire, offenses like rape, infanticide, and theft could potentially be punished with live burial. And then famously, purposeful premature burial has been used in wars by organized crime rings and syndicates and things like that. So that was kind of some heavy stuff for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So what I would like for us to do is talk about some myths and legends involving premature burial to kind of round out our episode. So the first one I'm going to tell you about is Saint Oran. He was a druid and he lived in Scotland and he became a follower of Saint Columba. This is the saint who brought Christianity to the place where Oran lived from Ireland in 563 AD. So they had trouble building this new abbey, okay? Mm-hmm. And the thought was this might be interference from the devil. So Saint Oran offered himself to be buried alive, to be like a sacrifice so that the abbey could be built, you know, successfully.
Seems like a weird solution, but
it,
sure.
It does seem weird, but you know, hey, it's what he had at the time. So he was eventually dug up and he was still alive.
Whoa.
Okay, but the legend goes that he described the afterlife that he had witnessed and it involved no heaven or hell. And in response, they ordered like, okay, bury him again.
Rude.
So he was reburied, and then they just continued building the abbey. And St. Oran's Chapel in Scotland marks the spot where he was buried.
I bet he haunts that motherfucker, too.
I bet it is so haunted. And I want to talk more about the lady with the ring. There is this European folk tale called generally the Lady with the Ring. And there, you know, have been several versions, but it's been popular from like the 14th to the 19th centuries.
Mm-hmm.
So in this story, a woman is buried or entombed. Okay. And she is wearing this super valuable ring. Now, a grave robber knows that she's been buried with this ring and he wants to steal it. So he is there trying to steal the ring and he cannot get it off of her finger. So he's thinking, well, the only option is to just cut the finger off. So I'll cut the finger off, take the ring with me that way. and he starts to make the incision, and that wakes up the woman. And so that is the story.
Surprise.
Okay.
That TikTok thing. Surprise, yeah. Surprise.
Surprise, surprise. Okay, well, speaking of surprise, in one version of the story, the grave robber instantly dies of fright because of the woman waking up.
Well, conveniently, there's a grave there ready, so she can just crawl on out, throw him in. No harm, no foul.
In some versions, the woman walks home like a super long way and shows up back at the house, like alive.
Oh,
okay.
Creepy.
And then in some versions, after that happens, she's seen outside the house and her family's like, oh, it's a ghost. And they like refuse to let her in. And sometimes in the story, she walks all the way back and it's her husband that dies of fright after seeing her actually alive.
Oh, that's sad.
Yeah. Versions of the story have been told in Germany, England, Scotland, and Ireland, sometimes with pretty big differences between the versions. So the German version is probably the most famous, and this was supposed to be, you know, like a super high up lady who had died, and it was supposed to have occurred during the Black Death in the 1300s. This story is so popular in Germany that in 1920, an ethnologist reviewed the origins of the story and determined that there were 19 different cities in Germany all claiming that their version of the Lady in the Ring had occurred there. In 11 of the cases, there are even like sculptures commemorating the story. It's that popular. A lot
of ladies.
I don't think that many ladies were accidentally buried and then woke up with an attempted grave robbing. Mm-hmm. I think that's maybe like a fable.
Tiny bit.
Yes. Okay. And in Ireland, there is a marble sculpture that is dedicated to this story in Shankill Cemetery, and it is a tourist attraction. It is the only undated stone in the cemetery. So that is everything I know about premature burial that is reasonable to share on a podcast.
I mean, I feel like that was pretty significant.
It's pretty significant. It was. What are your questions about safety coffins at this time? Where can you buy one? I do not have that information.
I don't know. I mean, I don't always have the most confidence in today's healthcare system, but
fair.
I kind of feel like, you know, at the very least, probably my husband's going to be like, you sure she did?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, again, if you're taken to the funeral home and you're so incapacitated that someone thinks you're dead and you're embalmed,
you're probably not in good
shape. You're not going to survive that.
That's definitely
okay. Yeah. So if that's the situation, if your plan is I'm going to be buried in a coffin, if you're in modern day and in North America, you're going to be embalmed. So just know that if you go through the embalming process, you will not wake up in a coffin later. That's just not a thing that would happen.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that's a silver lining, potentially.
Maybe.
It's very possible.
Yikes.
I am not a significant watcher of the show The Office, but I know that there is an episode where one of the characters, Dwight, has a family member that's going to be buried, and he shows up to the funeral and like knocks the casket open and like fires multiple rounds directly into the body to make sure that they don't, you know, wake back up later.
That sounds a bit drastic.
After we were talking about this potential topic at brunch the other day, I started like researching it. And then as I've been looking at it this week, I've been confronted with like multiple situations in movies and TV shows and different things like that, where I'm like, holy crap, that's another example of flipping premature burial. we were watching the 1994 classic Interview with a Vampire with Brad Pitt. Oh, God, so dreamy in that movie. My God.
The hair.
Yeah, God. Anyway, I had forgotten that Louis gets temporarily entombed inside of a casket, inside of a wall, you know, and he is saved, you know, but eventually, like, their whole plan is like, yeah, we're just going to wall him up in here. And then in American Horror Story, Hotel, there is a whole plot line where, weirdly, two vampires have been entombed behind a wall for a really, really long time. Of course, because they're vampires, they don't actually die, but they have been, like, just left in there, which is creepy. So once we started talking about it, I was like,
it's everywhere.
It is everywhere. It is definitely in, like, the consciousness of people. Because it is in so much of our media and literature. It's really fascinating.
Creepy.
Yeah. I was unable to find any sort of reference to, like, safety coffins for pets. I don't think that there are any or have been any. But even the safety coffins in people, you know, don't work, it doesn't seem like. They either don't work or they're not necessary. I don't know that we can say which one is true. Hopefully it's the unnecessary part. But there was an episode of Mythbusters where they were like, okay, let's try to, like, bury you under this dirt or whatever in a coffin and see how long you go. And they had to actually cut the experiment short because the weight of the earth was, like, collapsing the coffin lid. So they ruled it not plausible. They ruled it to be busted.
A cheap coffin.
Well, it's a lot of weight from, if you think about 6 feet of dirt, that's a lot.
It is. But you hear about people, you know, exhuming people for, you know, police reasons or whatever. And are those coffins collapsed? Maybe I'm assuming that those coffins survived the being buried. And
I haven't watched the episode, so I don't know what type of coffin they used. I only read about it and reported on it.
I'll have to see if I can find it on YouTube or something.
Okay, well, I think that's all we got for spooky Halloween time this year. I hope that you have enjoyed our episode on premature burial and safety coffins.
And if you haven't, don't go bury yourself alive over it.
That's true. That would be a grave overreaction.
I see what you did there.
All right, guys. Well, if you have stories, questions, cases, or anything else you'd like for us to read, please send it to introvetspodcast@gmail.com.
And you can find us on social media. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok, and it's at Introvets.
And don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast. It really does help.
Yes, it does.
And we'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bye-bye.